Hello, once again, welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in show. I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Ray Graff this afternoon. It is gardening today on the show, and we welcome back Bob Graves, the co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Hiya, Bob. Oh, your mic's not on. There you go. Say
there
it again.
You go. Hi.
Hi, hi. We also welcome Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Hi,
hey.
Fred.
Hey, how are you doing? Thanks for having us.
Of course. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Good. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And Delilah Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. Hi, Delilah. How are you?
I'm great.
It's good to see you.
Great to see you.
We welcome your gardening calls, 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. And you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. I mentioned in the billboard of the program that we do have several email questions already, and the phones are lining up. So let me say 800-348-2551, and then look up at you guys and say, should we just go right to questions, or do you have something you want to talk about?
Go right to it.
All right. We'll do some email questions to begin. This for the gardening show. Dez says, I have a row of green giant arborvitae that are about 15 years old. Some of their branches overhang a 10-foot tall fence separating my property from the neighbors. He wants me to cut back those overhanging branches. What method will be best for the trees? Can I just trim back the ends of the branches that come over the fence, or should I cut back the entire branch from the trunk? Thanks.
Yep, so that's a good question. You know, sometimes it's better to take it back to the point of origin. It does sort of determine, like, depends a little bit on what, how big the branch is. But in generally, if you tip it back, you're going to end up, you know, so you just nip it a little bit, you're going to end up going back after it year after year. So in most cases, we usually say, you know, prune it back to the point of origin, the point from which the branch grew,
And that's good for the tree, too. It's
fine
for the tree.
It's not going to hurt the tree. There is a good website if you're not familiar with pruning, treesaregood.org. It's put out by the International Society of Arboriculture, and it's free. It's consumer, you know, put out there for all free info. It's research-based. It shows you great diagrams on how to make pruning cuts so you know how, you know what to do when you get out there. And, you know, we always say never more than 30% off. I don't think that's going to be an issue in this case, but never more than 30%. Of the total volume of foliage being removed in one session. So it might take 2 or 3 years if it's really overgrown. But in this case, I think it's got to be probably a handful of lower limbs. Yeah, and arborvitaes are good because they regrow foliage from older wood. So if there is a bare spot there, as long as he's getting sun, it should regenerate foliage as well.
Depends a little bit on what it's going to look like on that side and what the neighbor wants. If he just
there's
wants it cut way back, then that's up to him. But it's going to be a little bit bare there for a while, as Fred said. But it won't be so bare on your side because that's not where you're cutting it. So
that's a good point.
You might want to consult with the neighbors about he doesn't want it taken back, so he's got a bare spot, you might not go back quite so far.
Correct, and that's a good point.
Correct.
And then so, you know, flattening out the neighbor's side can work, but I can't remember if there was a fence below that.
There is, yes, 10-foot tall.
So that fence is probably starting to limit what's growing below it.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
Probably work pretty well. And then if it's not too big, you may want to consider bringing it down a little bit so that it maintains that kind of fullness on your side.
Yeah, they will sometimes get leggy if, you know, so tipping them back or kind of shortening them will make them a little thicker, a little fuller.
Any problems with maybe taking out too much and causing it to be more susceptible to wind throw at all?
It would have to be quite a bit. So I don't think that they're talking about enough with just removing one side to make that kind of a difference.
As long as it's not over the 30%.
As long as you're sticking to that 30% rule.
Yeah.
Yep.
I imagine that the website will come up again throughout the program, but say it again now just in case it doesn't.
So it's treesaregood.org.
Treesaregood.org.
Yep, and it's research-based info. So, opinions on tree care can get you in trouble. This is all research-based info through the International Society of Arboriculture.
Don't believe everything you read on the internet.
That's for sure, yep. There's a lot of good out there, and there's a lot of, boy, amazing what I found online with terms of tree care. I'm like, no, don't do that.
Sure. James writes in and says, what's better to cover ground with to kill grass and weeds, black plastic or clear plastic? And what is the best lowest wild ground cover?
So we like black plastic over clear plastic.
Because clear plastic is going to let light in. It's going to keep growing.
It's going to keep growing. Yeah, exactly. Unless you did something called solarization, which would be done on a really, really hot day, and you wet the grass, and then you put it out there, and it kind of fries all the grass. But that's not really what we're talking about. Otherwise, just like Bob said, it's going to keep growing. So black plastic, definitely, you need to stop the light to stop the plant. I personally like, if you have weed fabric, you know, we've said this a lot, we don't like weed fabric in landscapes because there's a lot of problems that we don't have enough time on the radio to talk about. There's way too many issues with it. But long story short, weed fabric works really good for smothering weeds. And I like it better because it lets air and it lets water in. And plastic doesn't do that, so it keeps the soil microbes happier.
Mm-hmm.
And it also kills everything. So 1 month of smothering and you're good to go.
And yes,
and then part two.
Ground
low,
cover.
Low natural ground cover.
Yeah.
So, I really like wild thyme myself.
Ooh.
You know, that stays
you
really
like
little.
A wild thyme?
Oh, whoa. Okay.
That too.
It sounds fun.
Hey, me too. Me too.
Right. Exactly. It, you know, it's a nice, very low ground cover, very tolerant, can handle a wide range of pH, especially low pH. It's pretty when it blooms. So if you're looking for something that's wild, I think that's probably one of the nice choices.
I don't know that we sell it, but wild strawberries sometimes,
so,
too.
So barren strawberry is a yellow flower that has a really nice foliage, a strawberry-like foliage that is native. Creeping Phlox subulata
is actually
native, I believe into the Northeast. And then those are all pretty shade-oriented ones. So foam flower, that Tiarella is, there are some pretty nice selections of that one called Running Tapestry that does a really good job.
There's starting to be some new shortcut grasses, too. I mean, there are grasses that you don't really have to maintain or mow or fertilize or anything. Sometimes that's pretty easy.
There's and sedges as well. There's some sedges that will work. Pennsylvania sedge is a really popular one now.
1-800-348-2551 to call and participate in the show. Before our first break, we will do another email question, and then we'll come back and go to the phones. This is from Mandy. It says, some of my hosta shoots are coming up where I do not want them. They're a few inches tall. When can I move them?
Today.
Yep.
What about tomorrow?
Yep.
Tomorrow's good. Tomorrow's good as well.
Is there a date after which they can't?
You know, if you're going to lift the whole thing, right, just the whole clump that's there or the section and just replant it somewhere, then you can almost do that any time. But they're really much more tolerant when they're tight and not completely unfurled.
Before they're fully grown would be ideal.
Yeah, and right now they're just coming
up.
They're
just popping.
Yeah. You move them now, they're not even going to know they were hardly moved. You take the whole clump, they'll just grow perfect. Like, it'll be right, almost no setback. Yeah. Hostas are really tolerant of being moved.
I run over mine with my car tire pretty often, and they're okay.
And they're still okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Recommended.
Not recommended.
Well, I'm not doing it on purpose either. It's a back out of a driveway kind of situation. I saw something today about cutting hosta shoots and eating them. Have you guys ever heard of this or done this?
Yep. No, you can. It's actually in England, I believe, in Europe anyways. It's pretty common. They're sort of wild over there. So it's quite common. Yep.
The deer do that quite well in my yard.
Oh,
do they cook them though? They cook them up?
They don't. They eat them.
They like them raw.
Yeah.
Yep. I've just noticed that, that we talk about an invasive Japanese knotweed, which is another one of these spring shoots that comes up that's also edible. And if I say, if you can't beat them, eat them.
And we have very few in my yard, very few ferns, but the fiddleheads are coming up now, and I know people prepare and
fiddleheads are good.
Yeah, in fact, I was going to bring a batch in here, but they weren't quite ready yet. They're just starting to pop, at least our way. You might be a little bit further ahead than us, so you might see some popping. But
yeah, we've got, in my little garden bed, it's a total of less than 20. So we don't harvest them. We let them grow into ferns.
And this time of year is a really great time to, to forage things. And, so you talk fiddleheads. One good thing about, to sustainably forage those, you can do it year after year and never hurt the plant, is always leave two of those little coils on every plant. So you can take, if there's five, take three, but leave two for the plant, and it'll, year after year, you can pick them, and it works really, really well. So
it's going to
be 77 on Monday in Great Barrington, so they'll be
they're going to start
this weekend.
Yep, and when they go, it's like you start to see them, and then all of a sudden you go out 2-3 days later, and they're all ferns. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You do have to ID them correctly with any forage food, though, because there's a lot of poisonous ferns, and there's only really one that we pick around here to eat, and that's the ostrich fern.
800-348-2551. It is the Gardening Show on Vox Pop this afternoon, and we will be back in a moment. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Ray, here with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. You can call us 800-348-2551. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. And we will go to the phones now and begin with Chris in Housatonic. Hello, Chris.
Yeah, I'm not much of a gardener, but I was wondering if you could grow exotic fruits like mango, papaya, and limes in the garden?
You can definitely grow them as potted plants in your house if you have a sunny location and enough room for them. Limes would be reasonable. The other ones, I think, get a little big and take some time.
It's hard to grow them inside because there's just not as much sun, even in a sunny window. You know, these are things that are planted out in a field in Caribbean and Mexico.
Yeah, and they want a lot of sun.
They want a lot of sun.
Yeah, I tend to think, you know, you'd get it to live for a while, but it would probably long-term, like a mango,
papaya,
it'll end up, eventually it'll end up succumbing to some kind of other problem.
The citrus, yes, that's easier to do for whatever reason, if you got a real sunny window, but the others, it's not really worth the trouble, I don't think.
Yeah, unless if you have a sun space or something like that where you have more space, we've actually harvested papayas from a papaya tree in our sun space in Steventown.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
That's pretty much all sun structure, correct?
It's just windows on the south, east, and west, but nothing overhead.
Really? Wow.
So we accomplished that partly from a lot of TLC from my husband.
Wow.
And we have two avocado trees that are 8 feet tall,
yep.
And they just go out on the deck during the summer. We would put the papayas outside during the summer.
Very helpful to put them out because
yes.
They get some strength build up. Because in the wintertime, even the sunniest spot you have isn't very sunny because it's cloudy most of the time.
Yeah, not in the Northeast.
Right. So you get the strength build up in the summer really makes a difference.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not something that you should plan on working, but it's something fun to experiment, mm-hmm. See how long you can get them to grow.
Yeah, and avocados make really cool patio plants, too. They're really cool foliage, so it's a nice foliage plant. Even if you don't harvest avocados from them, it's still a really neat plant.
We offer
a lot of interest.
Some figs and some small olive trees, and you can get crops off of those as well. Same thing, put them outside in the summertime.
Yeah, figs definitely work.
And there are people in New York using unheated greenhouses to grow figs year-round and harvest and sell figs. How I personally would use my greenhouse space, but there are people that
there's
are
some
being
figs
successful.
That are fairly hardy.
I was going to say that there's a few varieties that are hardier than the others, so you want to make sure you get a hardy variety.
It used to be years ago the conventional wisdom was to dig them up and bury them for the winter.
Just people have done that.
Put them right in the ground and then pick them back up again.
Yep.
But there are some that you can almost plant. You know, they're talking about making us a zone 6 now.
They are talking about that.
I don't know, maybe.
It's based on the lowest temperature, though. So every once in a while, you might get away with a zone 6 plant for many years. But then it takes that one cold snap a couple of days.
They've changed their process. They used to take the average over 30 years. Now they're taking it over 15 years. So when they make this determination, which is a huge difference, you know, last winter, I don't know where I was, didn't get below 10 degrees.
Right.
Which is rare.
Which is rare, yep. And this one, pretty much the same. So that's two winters in a row where it really wasn't any real cold snap. You know, can it happen? Probably will. But I think it makes sense that weather's changing a little bit quicker nowadays.
Yep.
So I think, you know, hey, 15 years makes a lot more sense, realistically.
Y'all set, okay. Chris? It's possible, but might be tricky.
I got one more question. Could you also grow pineapples?
Sometimes you can find a pineapple already started with the fruit forming. It comes up usually from a warmer place, such as Florida, and then you would grow that on. To get it to do it a second time, you need to use the pups, which are the side shoots, and you could do that again with a sunny space and a lot of time.
Dale Isla can do it.
Yes. Dale Isla can do it.
My husband can do it.
One more.
I heard there's such a thing as you can get big limes down in Florida. Is that true?
Big limes? Sure.
Yeah, they grow like wild down there. I used to live down in Florida for a bunch of years, so it was like we used to pick star fruit, papayas. We used to get paid to pick up mangoes out of people's yards, and then we'd eat them. It was like...
You got paid and you got to keep the mangoes?
Yeah, they didn't want the mangoes.
Not in this economy.
I mean, if you think of the Northeast, though, when you look at it underneath an apple tree, how it's shedding all those fruit, people would, you know, they don't want you to, they don't want the fruit. There's so much of it. That's kind of like that with mangoes. It's hard to believe
to
that,
be
but it's
mess.
Like that with mangoes down in Florida.
Oh, sure. Mess.
Yep.
Sure.
Every place has a, you know, its own little unique little, you know, crops that do really, really good. And Florida's a good one for it.
Thank you for your call, Chris. We go now to Joan in Schenectady. Hiya, Joan.
Hello. It's so lovely to be speaking with you.
Nice to hear from you, as always. What's up?
Thank you. And, of course, hello to all of my expert friends. I don't know what I would do without any of you.
Hello, hello.
Hey. This one's a simple one today. Speaking of climate change and the growing profile, I always thought of parsley as just a one-season plant, but both my curly and my flat leaf decided to overwinter very nicely. Will it taste as good, or should I take it up and put in something new?
It'll taste just fine. We actually grow parsley as a winter crop in our tunnels. It will start to bolt to go to flower fairly soon. And that's when you get more of a change in the flavor profile. So just eat it before those flower stalks form and you'll be good.
Or keep cutting them off, correct?
Yeah,
it helps a little bit.
But that plant is a biennial, so it's going to keep trying to send up those flowers.
Losing battle.
Gotcha.
So you might want a new one in a month.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
That helps.
Good. Y'all set, Joe? Great.
That's all I needed.
Okay.
Thanks.
Talk to you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go now to Maria in Kerhonkson. Hello, Maria. I think you need to turn your radio off, please. Maria Kerhonkson, radio off. Go. Okay.
Good. Thank you. Great.
That's all I needed. Thanks.
Talk to you again.
All right. We will go now to Rick in Altamont. Hello, Rick.
Hi there.
Hi.
So we've been to Florida. Now I'm going to ask you to go to Wellfleet, Massachusetts. And talk to me for a minute about my annual hunt to get rid of the yucca plants. And I go out there with a pickaxe and a spade, and I dig and I dig to get those roots out. And I have been incredibly unsuccessful and the point of many jokes. And I'm wondering if there is a trick or some process that I can use to eliminate all the yucca plants that keep popping up in the yard.
Yeah, you could smother them, like we talked about a little earlier in the show. You know, there was a question about black plastic or clear. We said black is, you know, obviously the way to go because it stops the light, or a weave fabric type of thing. So that would work really well for you. Just a big piece of either agricultural or black plastic, or if you add some weave fabric, or you wanted to buy a small roll of weave fabric, you could stretch that over, anchor it down with some rocks. It'll stop the light. It's guaranteed you're going to win this.
Does your usual advice on that, Fred, include just keep cutting it?
Yeah, you could also, I mean, if it's up and it's growing now, I would, you know, cut it all down and then put the black plastic over it. And I think that would solve your problem. If you just kept on cutting all the new shoots this time of year, it doesn't have any, if you're cutting it, it's using stored energy to refoliate. And you're not giving it a chance for those little solar panels called leaves to work, then it runs out of energy. And by the same exact way of, you know, you're going to starve that plant out of energy, you're going to win. So either of those, not be hard.
I would like to say that, you know, you were digging them out, but you were definitely not finishing the job. And I maybe you can't. Maybe they're just too deep, but you're leaving little pieces, and that's what's sprouting again. So if there's any way of continuing to follow those roots a little bit and getting more of it out, you'll be more successful. I do want to say Yucca filamentosa is kind of native, certainly to North America and up into the eastern United States.
It's so hardy.
And then I think you should I think we all want to say that the oysters of Wellfleet are the best oysters, certainly on the Cape, and probably in a 50-100 mile radius. Of
very important to add.
Okay,
you all set,
there
Rick?
There you go.
if I'm successful in getting rid of the yucca plants, you might just find a bushel outside AMD.
that's why he threw that in there.
Just make sure you let us know so they're not sitting.
There you go.
All right. Thank you.
No, sure. Thank you.
You guys.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we'll go now to Gail in Woodstock. Hello, Gail.
Hi. I am a very good gardener. But I have a vegetable garden that I put in about 5 years ago, and it's built like Fort Knox. But last year, all of my peppers were being eaten, and I cannot imagine who was eating them. I didn't have any peppers all summer.
Wow.
So you think it was us?
I had about 15 plants, and they were all being eaten. Nothing else in the garden. Not the tomatoes, the cucumbers, the beans, nothing else.
Just the peppers.
And they were being eaten. They gained some height. They were, 8 or 12 inches tall, and they ate the tops, or what? How did they eat them?
The plants or the...
I don't even think they got to that height.
So they were pretty young, the starts.
They were young. They were young. They were in pots.
Oh.
And did they look like they were... chopped down like little lumberjacks took to them, or the whole top was just nipped right off and disappeared?
I guess I would have to say lumberjacks, and it definitely disappeared. It wasn't like something was snipping on them and they just fell off.
So you didn't find any.
You didn't find the pieces. They were eaten.
Yeah, that's an indication.
I did not find any pieces that weren't eaten, no.
Okay.
So voles, often will chew small... at the stem, at the base, they'll leave, a nub or an inch at the most, and then they might take those away, or they might leave some of them. And then, of course, deer can eat things. Woodchucks can eat things.
I'm thinking
and
woodchucks.
Rabbits can all of those three for sure are a possibility. After that, I don't know.
Yeah. So at our garden at home, of course, we fence it in and we try to keep critters out because it's the easiest. Prevention's usually easier than trying to fight them when they come in. So occasionally things get in and you don't know, often you don't see them. So inexpensive trail cameras are really great. They'll pick up everything from a vole to a big as a deer. So and everything in between, and they're relatively inexpensive. You can download the photos to your phone, or you could even look at them on the little screen of the trail cameras. So, I say, when in doubt, put a trail cam out.
And a row cover, for the beginning of the season, some kind of floating row cover framed and, with the ends closed at least, during the day, when you're around closed at night, but open during the day to let some air out, might be a way to keep them from being eaten right away until they gain some size.
The way things are going, at this point, I wouldn't recommend putting in a garden without figuring on fencing it, because there are so many critters out there. There just seem to be more.
Oh, I'm sorry. I am totally fenced in.
Okay.
And the wire fencing goes down almost 2 feet.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you really are built like Fort Knox over there. Wow.
I'm telling you, it's Fort Knox. And underneath the floor, there's mesh. Wiring as well. It's Fort Knox.
How big is the gap on the wire? Just curious. Like the spaces, is it like an inch?
I have two kinds. I have an inch. I have like chicken wire.
Oh wow.
I have chicken wire, and then on the bottom 2 feet, I have it's about a half inch by a half.
Oh, like a hardware. Wow. So that's definitely well done. That might be a good one for the trail cam. Let's solve the problem. Let's catch the critter in the act.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think of voles. Just yesterday, my husband found this whole stash of arugula under a piece of weed mat that the voles had eaten and
stashed
it.
Wow, they have good taste.
They were still assembling ingredients for a salad.
Yes, exactly. I'm curious, did they all disappear in one night, or would it be like one plant a night?
No, it was more like one plant a night.
And then it just
kept going. I mean, it started at the beginning of the season and it never let up, and it included
It was a lot of shishito peppers and jalapeno peppers and other various hot peppers.
Gourmet
that
critters.
Were all
think that if because you said you've fenced it in well enough for the larger animals, there's not, you know, there's not a lot of choices left. And
probably
voles are probably it.
Yeah, I would just get some metal hoops or PVC hoops and cover it with either some netting or, as Greg mentioned, row cover. And you can you can anchor that with pipes or bricks or rocks or whatever around all the edges. And if they still disappear, you know that it's something that's then burrowing underneath.
Okay, and it can't be insects of any kind, I wouldn't think.
That's what I was going to say.
Sound like it.
Not cutting those whole plants off like
that, not to have the plants disappear. No. I mean, it could be cutworms, but you would find remnants of the plant laying there. Yeah. Whereas if it's gone, something's hauling it away.
Something's hauling it away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Gail. Have a
good
great
luck.
Day.
Okay.
Great growing
you
season
too.
To you. Mm. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. It is Gardening on Vox Pop, and we go now to Carrie in Durham. Hello, Carrie.
Hey, hang on 1 second. I'm going to change my audio so you can hear me better. Hi there.
Hi. Hi.
So I went to the garden show in Troy and went to Fred's talk on pruning trees. And then I came home and looked at a couple of my trees and went, uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
I have 2 8-year-old maples.
Okay.
That are now probably 20 feet tall.
Okay.
And both of them have a pretty big fork as the first junction. So there's one fairly straight trunk going up and then a fairly now large aspect limb coming off. I just measured them. The base of one tree, the main trunk is about 20 inches around, and this lateral branching tree trunk is like 14 inches. And the other one is about 13 or 14 inches around on the main trunk, and then about 10 inches for the lateral branching.
Okay.
Are they too big to take off?
So you basically have the codominant thing that we talked about, and obviously you were paying attention pretty well. So that's thanks for attending. You have a couple of options. It's probably still not too large to remove. So long term, it is a large it is a large aspect ratio branch, which is going to convert a lot of that. It's going to discolor a lot of that wood. But it's still a young tree. Your other option would be to reduce one of those codominants. So you could, cut it back fairly, maybe by 30% to another lateral branch. And what that does is it's not going to change the size of the codominants yet, but if you reduce one, it's going to put all the vigor to the other. And then over 5 or 7 years, you're going to see the main stem becomes much larger, and the other one will now become more of a smaller aspect ratio branch, if that makes sense. If you wanted to email me a photo of it, I could take a little bit closer look, fred@landisarboretum.org. But otherwise, I don't think it's too big to take it all off. But if you're taking away 50% of your tree's foliage and doing so, then I think I would still urge you to probably say, let's do it in sections. So first step would be a reduction. You could cut 30, 40% of the branch height off, leaving, back to a lateral and leaving the other one alone. I would pick the stronger, straighter of the two to leave on. And then, look at it for a year or so. And then next year you could come back and you could remove it further. Or you could say, well, you know what? It's looking like it's sort of working. And then you'd be able to, go ahead like that. So either one of those options I think would work. But if it's 50% off, I think I would rather see you do it over a 2-year period.
And I'm taking the height of that lateral. I'm taking the height of that lateral, but I'm not taking branches off of the lateral.
You're really just taking the height. You want to get the end of it off, and you're cutting back to a lateral that's, I would like to see it at least one-third of the size of the one you're removing. So that it can still sort of function without thinking it's topped. And if you want to follow up with an email with me, that's fine too.
If you look back, I actually did email you right after the lecture.
Okay.
So you should have an email with a bunch of pictures.
Very good.
But I can send another one.
It would be best if you could. That would make things easier for me. I get an unbelievable amount of emails.
Bump it to the top of his inbox.
Exactly. Now it'll be top of the inbox. Yep.
I'll find it and resend it.
Yeah, and I promise I'll get back to you much quicker this time.
That's okay. I figured you were busy after that show.
It's been unbelievable, but all good.
All right, great. Can I ask one more quick question?
Very quickly.
Since I missed your email, yes.
Is it, when do you cut back a shrub rose? Now, or yeah. It hasn't come out at all yet?
Yeah. So this is a great time to reduce all of your roses, whether they're, a shrub rose, as you said, something that it sort of just lives naturally, or whether it's a hybrid tea or something, Floribunda and Climber. Bring them back. And this is where that one-third rule is flexible. You can actually take, the plant back to halfway or even more, depending on what it is. So when you say shrub rose, if it's like a knockout or something and you haven't done, anything to it in a few years, so it's 5 feet tall, you could cut it in half. And if it's a two-year-old one and it's 3 feet tall, you would take, bring it back to 2 feet or so.
Yeah, this is sort of one of these like shrubby wild roses that's been on the property since I moved in 25 years ago.
Yeah. So it flowers what color?
Pink.
Pink.
So pink, yeah. And
like a light pink.
A light pink.
Yeah, you can cut that pretty hard.
Yeah.
That might be maybe a damask rose.
Pink. What size are the flowers?
That sounds...
The only reason I'm hesitating is that there's a few roses that bloom on old wood, and those, if you cut them, you can either severely reduce or eliminate the flower potential for this year. So when it blooms, does it bloom for just a short time in June and then it's done for the rest of the year?
Ah, boy, it's been there 25 years and I have to think. It seems like it blooms fairly decently long, not all the way to the fall.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah, I think you can reduce that one without and still get some color, I would say. Yes.
Thank you, Carrie.
Great. Yep. All right, I won't take any more of your time. Thank you, guys.
Have a great day.
You got it.
1-800-348-2551. It's Gardening on Vox Pop, and we will return after this. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Ray Graff this afternoon. It is Gardening with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dalila Riggs. The phone number 800-348-2551. The email voxpop@wamc.org. We have an email from Matt who has two questions, and I will read them separately so we can all stay not confused. Maybe. The first, I'm wondering if there are any flowering plants that deer will not eat.
Bottle brush buckeye. It was on the cover of...
Kazuntite.
bless me. Michael Durr's old manual of landscape plants, which was the Green Manual, has a plant on the cover. And a lot of people don't know what that is. I don't think he actually tells you what it is, but it's a bottle brush buckeye. We've had plants at the arboretums that were installed since the 50s. Durr does make a note in the book that it's very deer resistant. When he talks about bottle brush buckeye, and I will say that is 100% true. It's probably it's an incredibly great flowering plant. It puts out a huge bottle spike of foliage or a flower, and hence the name bottle brush buckeye, because it looks like a big bottle brush.
There's a few like Pierre's japonica.
Zero.
They don't seem to bother too much with the Japanese Andromeda. Some rhododendrons, they don't bother. Some azaleas, they don't bother.
I think it has a lot to do with the population density. Where we are, Great Barrington's pretty good, South Berkshire County in general, but Connecticut, Litchfield County, and then Columbia County, that we notice that it's much, much heavier, that there's less choices. That said, there's also a lot of perennials, anything in the mint family, so bee balms and salvias are really good. Believe it or not, for some reason, for most people, because you always have to qualify, coneflowers work really well. They just don't seem to go after those.
My forsythia, they don't touch.
I was going to say forsythia and lilac around
Lilacs,
us, they seem to not bother. Daffodils,
Yep.
They'll stand in my daffodils and eat the grass beside it.
They do not like daffodils.
Yeah. Father Gill, Father Gill is another one.
Yeah,
it's a, which is a really awesome. That's a great underutilized plant. Great shape, great flower, great fall foliage.
There's a bunch.
I've never really
seen
anything browse on that. So yeah, there was quite a bit. Buttonbush, I don't think it's browsed up too much either, and that's a native. And that'll take its feet really wet, but it'll also tolerate drier conditions. Part sun, part shade for that guy.
Question two.
I grow a cherry tomato plant in a large bucket on my porch. Will it do any harm if I keep topping it off once it reaches the top of the large cage I have supporting it?
Not at all. It'll put out more shoots from the side, and you may actually get more tomatoes because of that.
Yeah, big bushier plant instead of a long, tall plant.
Yeah.
Trimming the vines. Ugh. That's so obvious and something I've never done, and I'm always fighting them through the foliage. Oh, goodness. You guys are really, you're going to fix my summer. Let's go to, let's see who's been on hold the longest. Okay, we'll go to Paul in Clifton Park. Hello, Paul.
Yes, hello. Thank you. Two lawn questions. One, I've got the voles or moles, whichever make the little tunnels in the lawn, and I want to get rid of them. I did buy some poison peanuts by Victor. And I don't want to poison them and have a hawk eat them. So, first of all, are the poison peanuts okay? And then my second question regarding lawn is the town flushed the hydrants and washed the edge of the lawn where it meets the road away. And they came back and filled it with nice soil. And I want to put a grass in there that has a good root structure that would resist that water flow in the future.
Yeah, get a good mix that has some turf-type tall fescue in it. That's the best you can do in terms of a grass, but that shouldn't be a problem. You should be able to take care of that pretty easily. In terms of the moles, if they are moles and not voles, they're making the tunnels underground, and you're probably not going to have much success with the poison peanuts. The moles' primary food source is earthworms. They will eat grubs, but they're primarily after earthworms. And if you're looking for the least environmentally invasive way to handle them, we use regular mouse traps baited with peanut butter and put something over the top of them, or as Dale Isla has suggested, put them inside of a big PVC pipe so that nothing else can get in there, and they will come up after them. There are also repellents that are non-hazardous that you could put down and try to scare them away and make them go somewhere else. But it's very hard to use any kind of poison to get rid of those. And you are, you know, have the potential risk of some animal getting a hold of that poisoned rodent.
Yeah. And so moles, which we're pretty sure that's what you have since they're in the lawn and they're noticeably kicking up some soil, are moving into your yard because it's been pretty quiet out there. You haven't been mowing the yard. You haven't been spending any time out there. And it's really, not completely, but for the most part, as soon as you do start to spend some time out there and are regularly running the mower around, they don't like that. They will move off to the edges where it's quieter. So it is very seasonal, spring, and then you do notice it in the fall more, and much less so during the summer.
And they don't really cause any problem. They make a mess, and it's an aesthetic issue. But it's not like a vole. A vole is a herbivorous, and it's eating plants. The mole is looking for earthworms.
When you mentioned the tunnels, are you seeing them on top of the ground, or are they underneath and throwing soil up?
Good question.
Yeah, I see the tunnels. You know, they're little tubes that stick up that push the soil up. And then every once in a while, I see an actual mound of soil where they probably came out, I guess.
Okay, so that would be a mole for sure.
That's a mole.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Mole. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Folks. Sure. Have a great day. Let's go now to Ed in Keene, New Hampshire. Hello, Ed.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being there. I'm a budding orchardist, just a beginner, doing the best I can. I've got well, budding is fantastic right now. It's unbelievable the number of buds I have. Hope they get through the next couple nights. I'm just starting out, and I'm taking it step by step. I'm not too worried about having quality of fruit. I just want to learn and go. So I've started, I pruned in March. I did a copper spray in late March for fire blight. And now I'm into surround. I coat my trees with the kale and clay. And that all seems to make sense to me. I'm looking to take the next step. Any suggestions? And just recognize I'm going slowly and just easing into it.
Yeah. So first off, if you have never really taken a pruning course, that's, you know, I would recommend it highly. What you find online, and we talk about how the internet's filled with wonderful information that is either good or bad, depending on the source and who's putting it out there. But consumer beware, because it's really hard to tell unless you're really in this and, you know, living it in a professional a lot of times. So that being said, there's been a ton of changes to fruit science. And really what we're doing is a lot of orchards, you know, would generally let a tree grow for us to a certain height. And they generally, as branches get leggy, they're generally shortened, and shortening branches generally makes branches stiffer, and stiffer branches are less prone to bending when you load them up with fruit. We're going the other direction with that. We're actually letting the branches grow longer, let the fruit form on them, let them bend the branches down, and we're not topping trees. If you want a dwarf tree, you buy a dwarf tree. If you want a tree to get, you know, hey, we want a little bit taller than that, you can get a semi-dwarf. But the tree itself is determined, it's genetically going to reach a certain height. So by topping it, the research shows that you fight suckers, those little sprouts that keep coming up, and water sprouts. And we say, you know, I like to say, don't get suckered into suckers. So by not topping your tree and letting it grow to full height, that's going to be one of the best ways to stop those from growing. And also by letting the branches get long and letting them bend down. If the branch bends down, you hold your arm up shoulder level and it's level. If the branch is bent below that, it won't produce water sprouts. And by letting them grow low, they're naturally going to have that weeping form that you often see a lot of times in orchards. And then if you want to take that top, and it's getting a little bit tall, but, you know, they said it's supposed to get 12 feet, but it's looking like it's maybe getting to be like 13, 14. You could take that top and bend it. And even if you hear some of the fibers breaking, like crack, that's okay. Just leave it on. It'll grow. It'll heal. It's only the top part we're talking about. And you're going to end up with, you know, a much better fruit tree that's going to be an incredibly it's going to produce well, and it's going to be a lot less work. Don't get suckered into suckers.
It's nice with apples in particular to do a little organic spraying as the season progresses, because you're going to have some particularly fungal problems and maybe some insect problems, and there are organic ways to handle that. But I have an apple tree that I don't spray, and it's got a lot of apples, but they're not very nice. There's an awful lot of damage to them.
So all of the extension services, I'm sure, you know, New York State, but I'm sure New Hampshire, University of New Hampshire probably has it, but University of Massachusetts has some great information on their website. You know, if you go just umassextension.org, I believe is enough information, and then just start you know, clicking on anything about, you know, apples in particular, I think you'll find a lot of good information about what kind of things to do to control any insects or diseases as you get past May.
A good point, as we're saying, some stuff on the internet isn't very good, but if you're getting it from a land-grant college, Cornell or UMass,
yeah,
or
a lot
Purdue
of the extension EDUs at the end.
Those places are pretty good sources of information.
For sure. Yep.
Yeah, I know Cornell has a really good publication on fruit production for home gardeners that you can access online. You can get it as a PDF online. So if you didn't put down a horticultural oil, it, depending on what the situation is for temperature for your place, you might still be able to do that if the buds haven't pushed too much. That will smother a lot of the early season insects, and that's just a very fine, fine horticultural grade oil that you can get at any garden center. So if you haven't gotten that on yet, I would try to get that on before it hits 80 degrees in the upcoming days.
Or after, because if you're in New Hampshire, I'm sure everything's pretty tight.
It's going to be pretty tight up there.
That's true.
Yep. Okay.
The buds are coming quick. I was going to toss up between using an oil or using the kaolin clay. And for some reason, I opted for the clay. It turns all the trees white, makes them look weird, but makes you think like it's doing something.
Yeah.
I don't know, you have a thought in either way or both?
The kaolin clay is good for some insects, but the oil is going to smother other insects that the clay will not really address.
So I think typically the clay would be a post-bloom spray, because you want to do the foliage as well, which you don't have yet, of course. So if you've already done it, You know, you could probably go ahead and do the oil and then consider doing the reapplication of the clay late May once post bloom and all the leaves are out.
Yeah, the clay regime calls for every 7 to 10 days during blossom season. So it's going to be an intense couple of weeks here. But I could do the oil yet. I'll give that a shot.
All right.
Okay.
Appreciate y'all.
Of course. Good luck, Ed. Have a great summer with your trees and future after the summer as well, one hopes. Let's take an email question. Judy writes in and says, any suggestions for grass die-off beneath a very, very active bird feeder? Will applying lime beneath help combat the increased nitrogen? Is lime harmful to wildlife or pets?
You know, the seeds are smothering. It's acting like a mulch. It's literally smothering. That's how mulches work. They cut the sunlight the same way the black plastics do. So the only way to really get it is probably rake away.
Don't some of the shelves have herbicidal properties too?
Yeah. Sunflower seeds have a little bit. So that's often why it's bare. But yeah, raking up the seeds.
Cleaning it up.
Loosening that soil and reseeding. Lime is simply changing the pH. And you don't know. Yeah. Unless you know the pH, it doesn't really matter whether you use the lime or not.
I generally don't recommend ever using lime unless you check the pH because you just don't know.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's a real easy thing to do, and it's seconds to do it.
Loosen the soil enough to let the seed germinate and see what happens.
Tara writes in from Saratoga and says, I inherited a yard with a large, well-established peony planted next to a large old maple stump. The roots of both are well entwined. I'm hoping to build a raised bed around the stump. Is there any way to save the peony without moving it? For example, slowly raising the soil level, or will that smother it? Thanks.
Peonies don't like to be deep.
They don't like that.
Nope. So you're ultimately, if you're going to build a raised bed in that area, you're going to want to move it. But you're not going to want to move the peony yet, I would say, unless you guys
it's
think.
It's really more fall.
I would say more end of summer.
I mean, you know, here it is. Do you want to do something? You want to make a raised bed? If you can lift the peony out, the problem is that it's sort of attached to the stump, so you're going to probably bare root it, which is not ideal. And so if you have to do it, go ahead and do it. It's not going to kill the peony. The flower buds that form or are forming now that are going to come up may just not open. They may just sort of stifle and stop. But the foliage will keep coming. It may not look as full as it did last year, but it will be ready for the following year.
Yeah, and if you can wait, then careful. I'd say end of summer is better. That's the time to move them, and they move really well, and you can actually divide the quorum, and you can get more than one peony out of it. And whenever you move them, I always say, again, just make sure you're not planting them any deeper.
Yeah, they like to be shallow.
They like shallow. They don't want deep. So match the grade. If it's doing well, match the grade.
Yep.
Catherine writes in and says, I'm trying to resuscitate an old rock garden, mostly full of weeds right now. Can you recommend some alpine plants that line sun and resources for finding them? Sorry. Can you recommend some alpine plants that like the sun? That's what I bet the typo means. And resources for finding them.
Juniper. Juniper's a good one.
You know, there are rock garden societies, and I think that would be the best resource. I know there's one that meets in Berkshire County, but I don't know that it's the Berkshire County Rock Garden Society. Berkshire Botanical Garden is over in Stockbridge, and they would have some really good contact info for that society, I believe. There are lots of small, dwarf sort of perennials that are often used. There are lots of dwarf conifers that are used, so really tiny little Hinoki cypress or spruce.
And some of your sedums.
There's lots of fun sedums. You know, there's little veronicas. There's
some of those euphorbias also work. Those creeping euphorbia.
Yeah, and it doesn't always have to be tiny. I mean, a little iberis right now. You know, candy tuft, which is this white thing that's blooming right now, stays short and semi.
Creeping phlox, possible.
Creeping phlox would be a fun.
I like those really tight phloxes that are
not subulatas that would work really nicely too.
All right, plenty of recommendations there. We are out of time, but I want to thank everyone who called in. We left a lot of emails unanswered and a lot of callers on the phone because these gardeners are so incredibly popular. Thank you for being here, Fred, Bob, Greg, and Delilah. It's always great to see you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. Support For Vox Pop comes from Orthopedic Associates of Dutchess County, orthopedic and spine specialist with Ortho Express walk-in centers in Poughkeepsie, Kingston, East Fishkill, and New Windsor. OrthoADC.com to learn more. And Autobahn Service, Route 7, Sheffield, Massachusetts, providing service repair and diagnosis of modern European imports, specializing in Volkswagen, Audi, Mercedes, Land Rover, Porsche, and BMW, AutobahnTechnik.com. Thanks again for joining us on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Susie Chekai took your calls, and I'm Sarah LeDuc in for Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, Taste of Rhinebeck. That's at 2. Capital Connection is next.